I'm Matthew Owen.
I'm Eric Kirk.
And I'm Dave Frank.
And this week we discuss the Epstein files, MAGA versus MAGA, and the 2028 presidential front-running candidates of Governor GQ Gavin Newsom versus Marjorie Taylor Greene. Hi, I'm Matthew Owen. Welcome to this week's Road to Wonk. And this week we're going to discuss, we're starting off with the Epstein files. The whole country wants to know what's going on. And you already can see what's going to happen. Congress approved it first after saying, no way in hell we're going to do this. Mike Johnson caves because he knew they had the votes to pass it. So, and it wasn't a floor vote. Correct me, David, you're more the expert here. What was it called that they did? They only needed 218 votes.
The discharge vote.
Discharge vote. Thank you. And once they got the Congresswoman from Arizona finally sworn in, they had their 218 votes, and that was that. So now all of a sudden, Trump, after fighting tooth and nail, don't get it out, says, oh, yeah, get it out. So it passed Congress. Now it has to go to the Senate. But the Senate's not sure they're going to pass this because it's just a Democratic hoax to make our president look bad. Gentlemen, what are your thoughts?
Didn't it pass? I thought it passed the Senate. I think it's on its way to Trump.
Yeah, I thought there was going to be some kind of punchline there, which was it's a total hoax. But then less than 24 hours later, it was basically unanimously approved.
So we're heading to the White House for the Daddy Dearest's signature.
And there's people out there saying he's said he would sign it tonight. But, you know, as of the last I've heard, it's just kind of sitting on his desk as he stews in the reality of it.
Assuming he signs it today, tomorrow, how many more months or years till it gets out to the public unredacted?
I think that's a trick question because the law says that they have 30 days to release the documents.
Up to 30 days.
Right. But the reality of it is that there's some caveats in there about protecting victims, not showing any abuse.
I'm 100% in favor of redacting the victims' names. And by the way, that's what this whole case is about. It has nothing to do with, we don't know if Trump did anything with an underage woman, nor am I accusing him of that. We have no idea.
Yeah, we don't know.
Jeffrey Epstein says, hey, I had an orgy last night with a couple 16-year-olds with Trump. That email has not come out yet. Just be clear on this. But we want to know who are the powerful people around the world who live in that other system of justice. Trump was always right. There is a two system of justice in this country, one for 99.9% of us and one for the 0.1% of wealthy people who avoid justice. And I think the average American wants to see who are these wealthy people getting away with this, because pedophiles should not be a political issue. I don't care if you're Democrat or Republican. It should be bad, period.
Well, I'll give you my theory. I don't think that there's going to be any smoking gun that shows that Donald Trump slept with minors. I don't think we're going to find that. I think what we're going to find is that he was pushing for the files to be opened up to the public. And then once he got into office, he and Pam Bondi learned that a whole bunch of Republican donors were on the list.
And CEOs and world leaders.
Throughout then. That's who I believe he's trying to protect. Now, I figured this was a bipartisan thing because that what they keep saying is, well, Biden had it. The files were unsealed in January of 2024. Biden had all year long to do it. But what they're kind of forgetting is that unlike Trump, Biden did not believe in interfering with the DOJ. I mean, he did stay out of it, right? And contrary to what they're saying, he had that wall up there and he was basically waiting for them, for the investigation to play out in the rest. At least it's possible that that's the case. But it, you know, it doesn't matter. Even if Biden was trying to do it, even if it causes Clinton problems and other Democrats, this is good. This shouldn't have been done. But why were they so desperate? And by the way, in terms of, in terms of profiles of courage, 4 days ago, there were Republicans who saying, I'm not going to vote for this thing. And then what, all but one? I mean, who's the House vote who voted against it? Does anybody know?
A guy from Louisiana.
Okay.
He was just dead set. He's, you know, it's a hoax. Why should I vote?
But, you know, I mean, that's huge. And that's obviously enough to override a veto.
Well, here's the magic question. What was Trump hiding? Why did he not, the day when he's inaugurated, he talked about this. I'm going to release Epstein files. Why did he not release them?
I think donors, but David, do you have an idea?
Well, yeah, I mean, so part of what if I was going to finish my thought from before about the other caveat of what we may, a reason why we might not see let's just call it everything in air quotes, is because they've agreed not to share anything that is either part of a currently ongoing investigation or has national security implications. And that last one is a loophole so big that you could drive a global conspiracy through it. And I think that ultimately that's where we're at, is that if you look at the set of documents that were released by DropSite News, they've done now, I think, their fifth release of documents from the modern day equivalent of like WikiLeaks. I forgot what their exact show, the name of that organization is called, but basically it's like white hat hackers. They've done five waves of releases already. And it turns out that Jeffrey Epstein was actually one of the most connected, plugged in, independent political movers and shakers in the world. And he was on a first name basis with world leaders, intelligence officials, business folks, banking folks. It goes on and on and
writers,
on.
So you could, celebrities.
Yeah, everybody from Noam Chomsky, like way left to Bill Gates, right? So
Michael Wolff.
Yeah, yeah, journalists and everybody in between. So a part of what, you know, like I said last week, everyone can go and read these documents for themselves because there's a lot to be learned there. But just the list of names alone is enough to make you realize why the people in five consecutive administrations have treated this as a national security issue, not as a salacious criminal sexual enterprise, which is really why I think the QAnon folks and the MAGA folks and Trump during his campaign and right up to the present, it's been such a hot button issue for them because of the salaciousness. But now where the rubber hits the road is people can't defend blocking these documents any longer.
And I want it to be supermarket tabloids. I just want the names of all the politicians, celebrities, the CEOs, or whoever else was the big donors were there. But we've already had one person go down, and that's Lawrence Summers.
Oh, yeah.
A Harvard professor and the former Secretary of Treasury. He was good friends with Epstein. He asked him for advice, and there's email after email after email. And everyone's like, why are you hanging around a pedophile? Good God. So he's basically being canceled. He's slowly quitting all these boards he's on, and they're pushing for him to get fired from Harvard.
Summers was a bit of a dick anyway. Doug Henwood, who used to write for Doug Henwood, when he wrote for The Nation, wrote an article based upon Summers' paper of his, a work of his, that was basically showed the benefits of taxing capital returns on stocks and all of the benefits. And then when Nation called him for a fact check, he flipped out and said, I don't want my work being used for political purposes, you know, and unfortunately the Nation's editors backed down and didn't publish the article. But, you know, this is a guy who, you know, writes something that's very interesting, but well, the minute it might have some practical impact on, you know, a lot of his buddies, apparently, he flips out. And but he is the first one to go down. The question is whether there'll be prosecutions. Now, I know that the statute of limitations has run on a lot of this stuff, but I don't know if there's a federal statute of limitations on rape still. I don't know.
And I have to say something there. Megyn Kelly, she went weird this week. She's out now defending that in this country, the age of consent is as low as 16. So who cares if a 40-year-old had sex with a 16-year-old? They look like they're older women. They're mature. And Mike going, if any 40-year-old man came up to my 16-year-old daughter when she was 16, first, I would have punched him in the face. Second, I would have called 911 saying, I've got a guy who just did statutory rape, put him in jail. So, but Megyn Kelly out there trying to defend this, I think she's trying to go betting on the come. What if the boss's name is in there? And what if the boss had sex with a 17-year-old? Is that really bad? Yes, it is, Megyn Kelly. You cannot say a 40-year-old man having sex with a 17-year-old woman is any way acceptable. But in MAGA world, that's okay. You know, who cares?
I mean, we're going to see if it's okay. I think the case that she was trying to make, and not to defend her in any way, but her case in and of itself is offensive. She was saying, well, barely legal, but that's a distinction without
barely
a difference.
Legal is legal.
Barely is yes. Barely means
porn.
Yes.
And kitty porn better still be bad.
I think her big position was, look, there's going to be so many people on there that are in that 14, 15, 16, 17 bracket that she's drawn a line in the sand for her, I don't know, for the benefit of peers, colleagues, I'm not sure who or why.
Politics.
Politics. It just, there's no constituency, publicly speaking, in journalism and leadership and politics. Like, she's fighting for somebody else besides, you know, the mainstream consensus.
When I turned 18, 17 was off limits back when I was a teenager. It's like, okay, you moved on. You don't hang out with high school girls anymore. You're in college now.
Well, there's Romeo and Juliet laws, right, Eric?
Well, right. I mean, there is some if you're within a range, you know, if you've got a boyfriend or girlfriend who's 6 months younger than you and you turn 18, that's in most states, that's not a crime. But it's she's right. It is a legal defense if the girl is convincingly takes the appearance of a woman, dresses up like that and does not reveal it. But we're not talking about somebody meeting somebody chance, you know, somewhere and thinking that she's 25 when in fact she's 17. We're talking about flying on a plane, you know, to an island where, you know, there's some type of transaction, whether it's social or monetary. And, you know, it's bad enough just without it. Even if the women were adults, it's bad that this existed and that so many people took, you know, part in this, and also just turn their head at the abuses that were there, you know, go ahead.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I really didn't mean to. I thought you paused. No worries. But there's a word that came up I've had conversations with, you know, people on the right, the left, the center, multiple states across the country about this. And there's a word that I tried to bring up to bring to light for folks, that a word we're not really hearing in the media right now is trafficking. If you watch the movie Traffic, you get you're nauseous and you're puking and the world is ugly and you know, you come out of it going, oh my God, this is such a dangerous world we live in. Turns out that the danger is the reason Epstein says that the dog is not barking, right? From the old Sherlock Holmes, story, is because that meant that the criminal was actually, the dog was comfortable with the criminal. And he's referring to Trump here. Some of those articles, first of all, I think Trump's name appeared 1600 or 1800 times.
So far,
20,000 emails, and this is the tip of the tip of the tip of the iceberg. So he's in the middle here. And I was just going to say that one of those emails. I mean, I don't want to dwell on the salaciousness of this because I think it's really much bigger society wide questions that are really going to really reveal themselves. But there was one person that was like just checking in with Epstein, like, hey, we're going to be on our private jet, you know, coming from our country, and we're going to have a grip of women, young women with us. And they were just casually in their Gmail accounts talking about the ebb and the flow of their dating. And it's one morally, I think that's a low watermark for global elites. And so that's why I think that Trump at all costs.
I'm waiting for the National Enquirer to pick up on. Epstein's brother sent an email to Steve Bannon saying, hey, does Putin still have the photo of Trump blowing Bubba? Now, for those of you who don't know, Bubba was a nickname given to former President Bill Clinton. And as soon as they heard that, they started laughing because I'm almost guaranteed that did not happen. But just the thought of, or the meme that's going around right now going, oh my God, how much blackmail stuff does Epstein have on these rich and powerful people?
I mean, he claimed in his emails that he could bring Trump down.
Well, that just to bring CEOs and other world leaders down. Prince Andrew just got his title taken away. He said, you're a pervert. You hung out with Epstein. Bye. You got canceled.
I mean, it's been public knowledge for a long time that he had his townhouse in New York, all the rooms, cameras everywhere, so that everybody that went in knew what they were up against. And really, it's this like code of silence, conspiracy of silence. And so that's really, maybe the folks involved aren't all criminals, but they all participated in the conspiracy.
Yeah,
I was just going to say like that magic said, word conspiracy.
They may not have broken the law for a number of reasons, although any exchange for money for sex is breaking the law. But maybe it wasn't that type of transaction always. You know, apparently there's no law against influence or access for sex, right? Apparently that's just fine. But it's it's not a question of that. It's a question of the fact that these girls were trafficked to the island and used in other places, that Epstein himself committed basically assault against some of them, as and Maxwell and all the others participate in it. There's no way that all of these people who knew him so well couldn't have had some idea that this stuff was going on. I mean, it's not inconceivable. Either they're incredibly blind as bats, or they're just morally compromised. And maybe, what's that last movie, Eyes Wide Shut, that what's his name did?
Stanley Cooper.
Yeah, Jack Cooper. I mean, maybe that is a depiction, you know, of upper crust society and all of its decadence, that, you know, maybe there's the stereotype isn't there. Maybe there's other Epsteins out there that we haven't even learned about yet. And well, maybe this is just more.
I mean, that's where I was going to go with this, is that he's not the only person that is an agent of influence. If you read the book, Agents of Influence, they're whistleblowers for decades who have said that this is the type of, it's about economic cooperation at the highest level, getting contracts for different things. And this is, the women were more like an accessory. They were more like the lubricant to keep the wheels of progress going in many ways. So that's really, I think, some of the most unfortunate part of this, is that it's just so big and so shocking to our sensibilities about how the world works that are we really going to even want to engage when we see how far and wide and deep this all goes?
We really need to also, we shouldn't discuss the story without really giving due credit to the bravery of the survivors of this. Yes. Of some of them. I mean, they have come out. I want more investigation as to the woman who supposedly killed herself. I'm not a conspiracy theorist by and large, but there's a lot of weird stuff about that timing. And people who are saying, of course, we hear this a lot. Well, he didn't seem suicidal. She didn't seem suicidal. But just the fact that it was driven to that, the fact that they're being attacked, and quite frankly, It's the denial of it. The cover-up is basically victimizing these women again, and they need to stand up. The ones who who are willing should be given an opportunity to testify on live television in open House and Senate hearings. That's what should happen. That might be more important than the files. And that needs to be the focus, is justice for the survivors. And that's where, you got a small handful of Republicans that maybe are principled, maybe who also endured certain things.
I have a feeling we're going to be talking about this Epstein subject for the next 6+ months.
Yeah. Right. So, I don't know what's in the files. I'm not going to say that, pretend. I have my suspicions as to what's going to come out. And of course, a lot of times the government, when they're forced to do things out, there might be entire pages redacted, and it might be that only 20% of the content is released. We don't, we're not going to know. But the problem is when you're redacting, you got to be real careful because it looks really bad. If there's other clues as to who that is, you can play a game of code breaking to say, okay, that name got redacted, but look at this sentence over here and that suggestion. That really does seem like it's so-and-so who was named there. If you have any questions or comments, email us at redwoodwonk@gmail.com.
Listen to Rub and Wonk on KZZH 96.7 FM every Tuesday and Thursday night at 8 p.m.
Are we ready to transition to Mega versus Mega?
So I'll say one thing. I think we're about to transition, but I want to say one thing because we haven't said it yet out loud. This was, in effect, the first crack in the armor for Donald Trump, and it was bipartisan. So people are saying it's an inflection point. And I think we, like you said, Matthew, I think we will be speaking more and more about what this means.
And pivoting off that, David, Republicans are starting to look up and go, hold it. Donald Trump will never be on a ballot again. I can't ride his wake as a Republican with Trump at the top of the ticket. He cannot be on the ticket again, contrary to what Steve Bannon says about the 22nd right. Amendment.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
And they're starting to realize we need to go have to live life after Trump and what's going to happen to MAGA after that.
Yeah. I mean, this did lead to a bit of a civil war. They've been viciously attacking Massey. Trump just went all out on Marjorie Taylor Greene last week.
Marjorie Taylor Greene. You got her name.
Right, right. It's and I don't know if you saw the press conference this morning. She and Ro Khanna embraced each other, hugged each other. I mean, it was like a really strange moment. Ro Khanna says, "I've never done a press conference with Marjorie Taylor Greene before," you know, and Greene, I mean, we don't know what's going on. I think it's sincere. Unlike when Megyn Kelly was like trying to mainstream herself or something like that, I think that Marjorie Taylor Greene is sincere on this. Because she's also she's getting pressure from her constituents about healthcare, and she's pushed back on that. I'm wondering if there is a transformation going on here. I'm sure she's going to be primaried, but you know, if she's not in Congress, they might invite her onto The View. I mean, you know, there's just all kinds of things that can happen here, but she's kind of a fascinating person. We've thought of her, people have thought of her as a ditz, right? I mean, you know, with all the kind of stuff. And I'm still remembering when she hounded the Parkland survivor guy, right, on the street. I'm still remembering, you know,
Rothschild space lasers.
Physicians on January 6th. I'm wondering if we're going to see a transformation, not so much that you become a Democrat or anything like that, but a liberal, but she has apologized for the toxicity of what she has done in the past and said, you know, I need to be different. So you've got that. Boebert and Mace are kind of keeping a real low profile. They were there. Massey's not. He's all out. But you know, it ended up being 400 and whatever to one.
427 to one.
Yeah, I mean, so, but that's because they all had to do it at this point. They did not want to. They're already on record for having helped to block it, you know, up until this point, but there, you know, yeah, if we have elections next year, I assume we will, then there's a lot of people that are going to be running and maybe don't want to go down with the ship.
Can I say right now, we kind of pivot to Marjorie Taylor Greene. I'm agreeing with you, Eric. She's pivoting toward the center. She wants to run for Georgia senator. Trump told her no, and there's three other men running, and she's got more name recognition than those three combined by 10, 20. Mm-hmm. She can out-fundraise them easily. She's going on any and every show she can. She's on Bill Maher. She's on The View. She's on CNN. She's on MSNBC. And I'm like, oh my God. And she's sounding sensible. But most importantly, she's talking about the issues the average American's going through. She keeps talking about her son with the health insurance. We got to do something with these ACA exchanges. If we don't get back to subsidizing the premiums, they're going to double or triple, and the average American family can't afford that. Why are we, if we're doing America First, why are we sending $40 billion to Argentina? If we're doing America First, why do we cut off SNAP funding for our most vulnerable citizens? And I'm agreeing with what Marjorie Taylor Greene is saying. Everything she's saying, she's the only politician in the entire country who's talking to the average American voter. Nobody else is. Trump always talked about, I'm doing this for you. He takes care of the billionaire class and the corporations. He does nothing for his people, and he cuts SNAP funding for his most vulnerable people. Majority of them are in red states.
Sorry to interrupt you. So she is, you said, the only politician, I would say, at least in her party, because there are Democrats who are speaking more
AOC
broadly.
AOC and Bernie talk about folks. This all the time, right? But she, yeah. I mean, yeah, stand corrected. The only person in the Republican Party who's talking to the average American person out there.
So I think it was Glenn Greenwald. There's been a lot of coverage of this, but you know, when people are questioning Marjorie Taylor Greene's evolution and how obviously you could come up with a very long list of things that make her, you know, her integrity and her moral code questionable from the past, the one thing you can't say about her is that she's not genuine. So I suspect that she was genuinely MAGA, genuinely Trump supporting, and genuinely ill-informed and misguided on her policy positions for a while. But this evolution, Glenn Greenwald, I think, or one of his guests was saying, is that, you know, when they founded this country, they envisioned citizen legislators, that the participants in the House of Representatives would be representative of common folks and the interests of common folks. And we're not professors and experts,
right, and lawyers.
Yeah. So what common folks do is they learn when they're exposed to ideas, and they incorporate that into their worldview, moral code, and then they change and they adjust and they They speak truthfully to power. Power is the insulated individuals who stick to groupthink and stick to the party doctrine and bury their values, bury their morals when they have to for these hard votes. But what we're seeing is that they all decided that the truth of a citizen legislator like Marjorie Taylor Greene, and what's the guy from Kentucky's name, Eric? You just said it.
Thomas Massey.
Matthew, thank you. So yeah, Massey, people like that who are just saying, look, I've got principles that my party doesn't like it, my president doesn't like it, but I'm gonna draw the line here.
But rich guys should not be having sex with children. That's a, you know, principle.
Draw
that's
the line
a principle to have.
Correct.
But
real quickly, I don't want to make it this whole section about Marjorie Taylor Greene, but she's got several options. One is to run in the Republican primary in Georgia. The other is to run as an independent. The other is to run as a Democrat. I mean, and Georgia is a purple state. It's not, of all the southern states, it's probably the least red. Well, North Carolina, but still, it's if she makes a case on it, runs in the Democratic primary, I don't know who's, well, she would have to take out Ossoff. Yeah, so that he would have to not run. So I'm taking that back. But the other possibility is that she runs for another higher office on the Democratic ticket. I mean, she's got a problem because, yes, she's got new fans now, but those fans are already invested in John Ossoff and all of that. And there are some principled Republicans supporting her. You can go on to X and, you know, one in 10 people are supporting her right now. Not everybody. Laura Loomer is like, totally. I told you so. I warned you about her. I mean, as you know, she said, I warned you about her 2 years ago, you know, or whatever. It's, it'll be interesting to see what her future is. She also may not opt to run for office at all. She may want to be a different kind of influencer, write a book. I'll read it. You know, I mean, and I don't usually read memoirs of elected figures, but I read hers because I really want to know what's in her head.
And there's only two politicians nationwide who are standing up to Donald Trump and going toe to toe with them. Those two politicians are?
Well, Pritzker and Gavin Newsom.
Dude, I'd say Gavin more than anybody.
And right
Gavin
now, Marjorie
takes him
Taylor
on
Green.
Daily, one to one. Let's go at it, big boy.
Yeah.
And then Marjorie Taylor Greene is the only two people who are going at Trump every day and not backing down. Whatever Trump throws at him, they come back harder. Every other Republican just runs from the cover. Not Marjorie Taylor Greene and not Gavin.
I mean, give it to her. I want to pivot slightly since you brought up Gavin, because there's another potential mega civil war. As you've probably heard, some court panel of three judges, two out of the three, including one who was a Trump appointee, have now declared, after we passed Prop 50, that the Texas map violates the Voting Rights Act because it discriminates. Quoting John Roberts is, the only way to stop discriminating according to race is to stop discriminating according to race. And because these new things split up black and the rest, they said, no, you got to go back to your first map. And will this be upheld in the Supreme Court? Will the Supreme Court all of a sudden hear an emergency session to be able to block that ruling, at least pending longer review? We'll don't know. We'll see. But if Supreme Court does what it's been doing with all the other cases, it won't be in time for 2026. So here you have Texas threatening, it's already gerrymandered, by the way, to ridiculous proportions. And this is just to take it to its extremity. It had to step on toes of voters of color. And I mean, you know, more than step on toes. I mean, and so you have this position, and then all of a sudden California says, well, we got to counter that. And then ironically, Texas is overturned and possibly doesn't go forward. And even if it does go forward, as we've discussed on the show previously, it could actually be bad news for Republicans if Latinos are voting the way they're voting today rather than back a year ago. And so Republicans who went all on the line for this and see it blowing up in their faces where it could actually do this, maybe they don't want to go down with that ship. I'm suspecting behind doors right now, there's some screaming going on, you know, knife fights.
So I got a couple interesting things here. One is that, firstly, if you look at what the judge said in his ruling, I'm going to paraphrase here because I don't have the quote in front of me, but he's basically saying, based on the factual evidence, this is highly likely to have been based on race, this map. And he's so confident that it was based on race, based on the things publicly reported by the people who did the map.
Yes.
Yeah, that he's like, it's so crystal clear. I have to tell you, you can't use this map, period. And of course, it is going to go to the Supreme Court. And Eric, is it the Kavanaugh test about the maps being based on race? Or is that who set the standard?
I don't know. I do want to just make a quick note, though. Halima Khalid, I hope I got her name right. She used to be a KHSU DJ for music. Local, I believe her name is Halima. Her second name begins with a C. But her son testified at that trial as an expert in gerrymandering and has testified in other things. Quite happy about that. Just want to give that call out. In fact, yeah. I'll get her name before the end of the show so everybody knows. I don't know what his name is, but I just saw her posting about that. But I don't know if it was the Kavanaugh test, I don't know what standard was applied. I haven't really had a chance to review other than summaries of the decisions.
So basically, any gerrymandering that you do, all you have to say is that we did it for political constituency reasons. But if you say, oh, we actually did it to create more prevalence of Latinos in these districts, then it would fail that Kavanaugh test. And it appears that they flat out went public with this in Texas and said it overtly and made it part of the record. So the response to this, this is the last thing I'll say before I hand it over to you, Matt. That the Attorney General Paxton of Texas, when he was speaking about the Trump-appointed Republican judge's finding, what he said was, and again, I'm just paraphrasing, but he said, this is an example of the far left coming for our rights. And you know, this is exactly the thing we have to fight against, these far left activist judges. And the guy was a Trump appointed judge. It's really a lot of posturing. And maybe two years ago, Eric, I used to call this in our banter. I used to say a lot of these things that people would say were just team building as a way to get their base motivated and consolidate the network of support and power across the country. But because they're, you know, so much of this is either some version of cosplay, like which we could talk about separately, or worse, just malevolent forces, political forces just under the surface, that the boomerang is going to come back to hurt these people if they're not acting out of authentically the best interest of their constituents and instead are engaged in things like posturing and just pure power grabs.
If you have any questions or comments, email us at redwoodwonk@gmail.com.
Listen to Rub and Wonk on KZZH 96.7 FM every Tuesday and Thursday night at 8 p.m.
Sounds like Congress to me.
Yeah.
Well, one thing we need to talk about is mega versus mega. There's some strains out there right now, and where this real cracks really started to spread is Tucker Carlson had Nick Fuentes on the show. If you don't know who Nick Fuentes is, he's a leader of a far-right group who calls himself a white Christian nationalist, a.k.a. an American Nazi. He denies the Holocaust or said if the Holocaust happened, it was a good thing. He doesn't like blacks, doesn't like women, doesn't like Latinos. Just you're basically a guy in a KKK hood who's trying to get young men, they call themselves groypers, to follow his podcast now. Ben Shapiro went nuts. Ben Shapiro's got a huge influence on the right. He went on Megyn Kelly, and the two of them went at each other. Ben Shapiro says, no, we do not put Nazis and try to normalize them ever. You do not give them a platform. You tell them up front, this guy's a racist. He hates Jews. He hates women. He hates blacks. Just throw it out there. I've got homosexuals. He hates everybody. This isn't Germany 1933. This is America 2025, and we better start acting like it. So,
yeah.
No, go ahead.
I would just say, that schism is very real. In fact, Nick Fuentes did a whole episode recently where he had a MAGA hat and an America First hat. The MAGA hat's red, the America First hat's blue. And he said, MAGA is dead. because of X, Y, and Z, whatever their infighting happens to be. And he's saying that the real Republicans are going to be first America firsters. And with all that implies. So what I'm not here to adjudicate the schism, but just to say that it's very real.
And that Marjorie Taylor Greene, the nice Republicans against her.
America First was first coined in the 90s, and it represented the people who wanted to stay out of World War II. And some of them were at least fascist curious, if not fascist supporters. Some of them were, not all of them, but, the British First, would have been associated with the Clivedon set and others that were kind of pro-Nazi, at least early on. And, it has that roots. Now, like I said, there were a lot of people in all politics who wanted to stay out of the war at that time. They didn't know what was headed. Hindsight is everything. But that is the root of America First. Dr. Seuss, way back there, did a cartoon of a man with a beard, two men with a beard that connect or something like that. And it was a circus act or something. And here we have the combination of America First and fascists, right? I mean, so it was brought up back then. We're not talking about a group that has a lot of knowledge of history, but if I was advising them as an amateur historian, I would have told them, pick another name.
Right. And by the way, we had Britain First. It was called Brexit.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It didn't work out well for them. They thought we're going to make Britain great again.
I want to go back real quickly to the decision in Texas, because it's based on factual findings, the appeal is going to have a hard time because they're going to have to argue somehow that there's a de novo argument, that there's something wrong. The difference between de facto and de novo is that if a lower court has a finding of facts based on the evidence it viewed, appellate courts will only overturn that on what's called abuse of discretion, which means that it has to be so obvious that an appellate court judge who didn't sit through the 2-week hearing knows better than the panel of judges below him who actually heard the evidence. That's going to make an appeal a difficult one to overturn. And if SCOTUS doesn't want to do that, it doesn't want to break, wants to somehow break from that, or they have to come up with some kind of legal argument that the whole hearing was inappropriate or something. The Republicans are in a difficult position there, and they're all going to resent Trump for this because Trump is the one who pushed this.
Can you talk a little bit about the Comey case, the legal aspect that she didn't bring a grand jury finding forward to the...
She didn't even present one of the indictments to the grand jury. I mean, that is just absolutely insane. And there are, and it was dead silence. I mean, the reporters are reporting that when this came out, there was not a sound in that courtroom. Everybody was in shock when the DOJ admitted this. I mean, that's not something you go in with a straight face. And in different times, the DOJ would just said, yeah, we messed up, dismiss. Right. But we're not in those times right now. They want to at the very least punish Comey by making him pay as much attorney fees as they can. But this is, I mean, that's just reckless. And I mean, was it deliberate? I don't know, because people are saying it was deliberate and there are legal scholars calling for her disbarment. You know, look it up. Common Dreams quotes one of them and the rest. And so do I think it was deliberate? Well, the only reason I question that is because I don't know how she thought she could get away with this. But it's my feeling that she and any other DOJ attorney who was involved in that and let it pass, an indictment pass, that anyway, I want to point that out. That is a real big news, and it has the legal world in shock. Like, this woman is really out of her element.
But the thing we got to bring forward, Eric, is we had this through the first Trump term. The one thing that kept us from being an authoritarian country was the court systems. And they're still holding up right now. So thank God for that.
Anybody else want to comment on Comey before we go to our...
Yeah, I will real quickly. That the confidence in Comey's lawyers before this happened was that the things that the Department of Justice were going after were, selective, meaning you were going to try to punish him for something that you don't punish other people for, and that it was done in a vindictive, targeted, using the Justice Department from a position of malice. political targeting. And so those are the principles that they said they were confident that they could have this dismissed based on. They were additionally looking to have the prosecutor thrown out because of irregularities around her appointment. But now you could say this is the reason we were going to have her thrown out, because she doesn't really know what she's doing. She's not operating consistent with how this is supposed to work, and where they have to cover things up there. That is now even problematic in its own right. So it's just piling on, just making this Justice Department, this Attorney General, just look so far out of their element. And like, basically, this is a team of Trump's personal lawyers, cabal of folks who are, you know, history will not view these people kindly.
No, it's not going to. It's certainly not in the legal profession. And again, I want to just review going back to the beginning. I think it was, what is it, the Eastern or Western District of Virginia, was it, that where this was filed? The attorneys in the DOJ there refused to sign it. They were all fired. You know, so they had to bring in attorneys from other areas to do it, but it wasn't in time. She was the only one who signed that complaint. So if she wasn't properly appointed, that signing could lead to a dismissal right there, except for very rare exceptions. The statute of limitations is run. That if it gets dismissed, unless they can get into one of those exceptions of a dismissal not being a real dismissal, that's it. No more Comey thing. And that's going to reflect really heavily on the Letitia James prosecution and if they try to prosecute our senator. So why don't we go back a little bit? We don't have that much time to talk about this, but Gavin Newsom is obviously running for president. Pritzker, I think, is too. There's a few other Democrats. Is Marjorie Taylor Greene running for president? Well, again, I have to question, if she does, whether she'll be on the Republican ticket. But what are
your
thoughts?
You mean because she's coming too sensible now? She can't be a Republican anymore?
Her constituency isn't going to be Republican. So will she run as an independent? Will she run as a Democrat? I don't know.
Ted Cruz has already thrown his name in the hat. I always call him Tucker Hannity. Tucker Carlson immediately came out and said, what a fraud.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, post January 6th, Ted Cruz is on Fox News talking about the insurrectionists should be tried as domestic terrorists. Tucker took him out to the woodshed and spanked him hard, made him come back on the show and say the infamous apology. I misspoke when I said our base was domestic terrorists. These are proud patriots that just went inside the Capitol and beat up 150 law enforcement people, but they were proud Republican patriots. Keep in mind, every single one of the 1,500 who were arrested said they were Trump supporters. Every single one.
It obviously what everybody will expect will be the candidate is Vance, but he seems to have a constituency of Erica Vance. I mean, that was really weird. I thought people were being unfair until I actually watched the video. I mean, it's strange. And then there's a meme going around with a picture of Vance's wife with a annoyed look on her face, saying when your husband gropes a single mom wearing leather pants and you can't even have him sleep on the couch because he'll F that too. I mean, it's just, this is not, this is not something that a presidential candidate wants, but I just want to put out, while the time we have left, the MAGA people I know who I talk to, including my cousin, they don't want Vance. Vance is boring. He's not, he's got a certain charm.
Doesn't have a personality.
Right. A number of MAGA people that I know who are politically astute want Stephen Miller to run.
Yeah.
I mean, he's smarter than Vance.
Joseph Goebbels of modern times. Even looks like him.
That's the thing. Now, of course, we're assuming that there's even going to be elections in 2028, right? We have to consider that possibility because he keeps talking about, elections, I'm going to do like he did the last time around, except that it was a lame plan by Eastman. But, there's elections. We need to look into this. I'm suspending the Constitution for a couple of months. And look, hey, I won the election, actually, it turns out, or the Republican or whatever. I mean, I don't know. And then there is a possibility he'll run again on the theory, try to run again on the theory that it has to be contiguous terms and his terms were broken up. And
as were Grover Cleveland's.
Well, but there was no 23rd or whatever amendment.
22nd amendment.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so
have you guys been following South Park?
Yes. No. Oh, my goodness.
Oh my God, you're talking about J.D. Vance. I'm just going, first, Trump had an affair with Satan. Satan's having Trump's butt baby. And they had a whole segment on that. But now, of course, Trump's going bored because Satan wants to take care of the baby, not take care of Trump. So Trump has an affair with Vance. And there's a camera in the White House. And the film got out of the two of them going at it. And Fox News is just going for Clint, going, oh my God, our president had an affair with our vice president. What are we going to do? And then they call him and say, don't worry about it. Fake news, fake news. And that was it. It was over.
Dave, Trump, you wanted to say something?
No matter what happens against him, it was rigged if he loses an election. It's fake news if he doesn't like what you're saying.
No, that's right.
Yeah. So real briefly, you mentioned it a few times, Eric. You and I hadn't talked about this before, but I think Marjorie Taylor Greene is never going to be anything except a Republican, in part because it's up for grabs. The brass ring is up for grabs for 2008, and battle lines are just 2028. That's right. And battle lines are being drawn now. And I think that the base is at a moment, at least many of the people I've spoken with are at a moment of reflection, people of faith, you know, people that are, their religiosity is at the core of how they see the world. And their part, I've not actually explicitly connected all the dots here, but in part, they realize that Trump has been somewhat of a con charlatan force.
They are starting.
And when it's a deprogrammed people within a cult, you have to do it out of love and inclusion. And so that's where we're at right now, is that the degrees of grief, so to speak, of first being, we're not going to get into the weeds on it, but I think that this is something we're going to hash out over time. Who earned the mantle of the next grab at the ring as the pieces around Trump fall? Like you mentioned, Miller, Stephen Miller is more likely to end up on the wrong end of a Truth and Reconciliation Commission or a Nuremberg trial than he is to any elected office in this country.
I agree, but this is what
I think that's the way it's going to break. I think this is the way it's going to break over the coming six years.
Marjorie Taylor Greene's reaching out to the average Republican, not the
exactly
fire-breathing mega people who are angry and pissed off at the world. She's saying exactly what you just said, David. I understand why you're angry. Your wages aren't going up. $7.25 an hour for minimum wage in 21 states, primarily red states. It is literally economic slavery. And the Republicans are not increasing the wages because they cow down to their corporate billionaire corporations to tell them what to do. You want to raise people's lifestyle, raise their wage from $7.25 an hour. Their quality of life will improve immediately. She's talking about the whole thing. We have to do something for health insurance. We have to. She's saying it, and they're nodding their head going, she understands what our family's going through. She's saying the word affordability. Because I don't know about you, my PG&E bill goes up, my homeowner's insurance goes up, food goes up, gasoline prices have gone down this much since Biden was in office, pennies. I understand what the average American's going through out there, but she's the only politician I'm hearing outside of AOC and Bernie who are talking about this.
Pretty wild.
And she's gaining traction with the middle Republicans, and there's a lot of them out there.
That's right.
AOC politics and the Republican Party, we'll find out. I mean, anyway, weirder things have happened. When the Republican Party started, it was started by abolitionists and socialists, the 1848ers. There were a group of them that came from Europe fleeing the 1848 revolution, and they were elected Republicans, not Democrats at the time. Karl Marx endorsed Abraham Lincoln, and Lincoln was happy to have that endorsement. It was
Was a Republican, for the record.
Yeah.
Back then, Republicans were against slavery.
Yeah, we could talk about that history sometime, but it's fascinating. All right, this brings us to predictions. Matt, do you want to start?
Yeah, I'm going to say Marjorie Taylor Greene is going to continue her transformation process, talking to the American people. I swear to God, every single day she's on some new media that no Republican goes on, talking to the average American out there. I think she's doing exploratoria of a 2028 presidential run.
So in light of the fact that this bipartisan bill passed nearly unanimously through both branches, I want to point out that the House of Representatives is now discussing a bill banning stock trading, which is widely seen as minimally necessary addition to their ethics rules, which is going to overtly address corruption and insider trading. It's a hot button issue. They're demanding that they get a floor vote on the legislation. And so there are two Republicans, there are two Democrats, and they are both saying that this is the next Epstein thing. They really want to make a show of fighting corruption. So much so because polls for years have indicated like the bell curve, 85% of all Americans, all registered voters want this to happen. It's between 80 and 90% if you look at just different parties, different polls over the years. It's broadly supported except by the rich and powerful Congress members and their supporters. So my prediction is that against all odds, this coalition will be able to thread the needle and force the anti-corruption bill to the floor just based on this broad base of support.
Well, that would probably lead to the end of the tariffs, because that was by some people's arguments, the whole point of the tariffs, so they could do some insider trading. But we'll see. All right, I'm going to predict, and like I said, we've seen this happen in history. I do not believe that Trump is going to face criminal consequences for anything that comes out in the Epstein files. I suspect it probably won't reveal that he had sex with any minors. I think he would have been not even campaigning on that basis if there was any chance of that. I do think it's going to continue to look bad, but it already looks bad, and it always looks bad. It doesn't matter. Trump doesn't care what looks bad because he's got people that are going to follow him no matter what. But I do believe that my impression is that there are probably going to be a lot of donors in that for both parties, but probably more so for Republicans because they're very rich donors. And that this could lead to a temporary kind of campaign finance reform in effect, because all of a sudden they're going to be paying legal fees instead of making donations. Nobody's going to want those donations. So my prediction is, It's not going to bust any of the major political figures that we know of. It's going to compromise them. It's going to make them look bad, but it is going to have a major political impact for the reasons I've stated and others. We'll find out if any of that comes true. Till next time, stay informed and stay engaged.
And keep reading newspapers and articles. My God.
There you go.